Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. It once again I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Well, good evening. My name is Penelope Bennis, and I'm from Bellevue, Washington. I'm here with Dr. Nancy Brown. We are both members of NASCA, and we wish to welcome you to the Stop Child Abuse Now Talk Radio Show, which is sponsored by NASCA, which stands for the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. Tonight is Monday, September 11th, 2023. And before I kick off the show, I want to take a moment of silence to recognize those who lost their lives on September 11th, 2001. We will never forget. This is scan number 3266, and the type of show we have this evening is a special guest night, and we have a very special guest tonight. Her name is Brandy Olson from San Francisco, and I will tell you a little bit more about Brandy from the information she provided us before the show. But before that, I want to talk to you a little bit about NASCA and NASCA's mission, because as you know, NASCA is all about child abuse trauma prevention, intervention, and recovery. Our mission statement is that we have a single purpose at NASCA. It's to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect, and we do so with only two goals. The first goal, educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, showing child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. The second goal of offering hope and healing through many different paths, providing services to adult survivors of child abuse, and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. So Nancy and I welcome you to join our show tonight by calling in to be a member of our panel. You do not need to have any experience, just a curiosity and willingness to participate. And it's very simple. You just call the number, area code 646-595-2118. Again, that number is area code 646-595-2118. We have a backline into the studio, and Dr. Nancy will greet you on our backline and then welcome you into the show. You'll be muted. But as a panel member, you will have an opportunity. I break several times during the show. We break to allow the panel members to ask a question of our special guest, anything related to our special guest's story and testimony. This is her night. And so we do like to limit our conversation and questions to her story. So without further ado, let me tell you a little bit more about our special guest. As I mentioned, her name is Brandy Olson. Brandy, I hope I'm pronouncing her last name correctly. She's from San Francisco, the San Francisco area in California. She is a child abuse survivor whose traumatic experiences began as an infant. Placed in foster care at three, she spent 16 years in and out of multiple counties, placements, homes, and levels of sexual, physical, emotional, and verbal abuse. To quote Brandy, I started questioning the story of my life and the validity of the allegations and claims I have been told and read about in the few reports I had gathered from my past life, she says. 10 months paying for background checks, calling state agencies, local agencies, county agencies, and filing 3 different police reports. And she says, I had to step away at the beginning of the year due to emotional exhaustion and distress, lack of support or advocacy, disappointment at the very sketchy approach law enforcement took in the few counties I filed reports in. She continues, I decided to open some emails from my prior year's research about my childhood. She had forgotten that she was emailed digital copies of photos she had been given to an investigative journalist who ended up being unable or unwilling to help. When she zoomed in on the images, she found some disturbing evidence of a traumatic event that affected multiple individuals, adults, children, and a dog. She says, I've been in shock and struggling to find access to resources, terminology, case studies, reforms, etc. Brandy understands the system is busy helping the children currently within it, but finds it hard to let go of her need to understand what happened, why there are no reports, records, medical proof, or information. This is something I didn't know about my life or myself until just last month, she says. She feels lost and needs support, direction, and guidance. Well, I'm so glad that Brandy is on our show this evening, and this is a place where you will find all of those, all 3, support, direction, and guidance from your NASCA family. You are now a member of the NASCA family. You are now a member of NASCA. There is no paperwork. There's no initiation. It is once you express interest, you are in, and we call ourselves the NASCA family. So you will be very well supported, Brandy. And I just to let you know, besides my co-host, Dr. Nancy, we have Gloria, who is called in to support you on the panel, and Philip. So without further ado, Brandy, I'm going to unmute your line and welcome.
Sorry, now I'm in tears. Thanks, guys.
Oh.
thank you for saving.
Let me tell you something. Of course. Now, first of all, you know, I'll prompt Dr. Nancy and I will prompt you with some questions, you know. This is very relaxed. And by the way, the first time I did my own show on NASCA, I was shaking in my boots. So you sound very calm. I was I was so nervous. So
I think it helps I haven't listened to anything of you guys yet. So
yeah,
I
exactly.
kind of jumped into this.
Good. 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 And we do understand. And so I will just prompt you with some questions. I like to go chronologically through life because it just
can I correct one thing? Kind of was important
sure.
to me to correct. I just want to say that it was 3 days old. It was very important that you guys understand that it was 3 days old that I began my time in the foster care system.
3 days old. Thank you. Thank you for
thank
that.
You.
That is
you're welcome.
That is beyond. That is newborn, not even infant. That is newborn.
Yeah, it's important to me. The story is yeah.
Well, thank you.
Correct.
Thank you for
yes.
making that correction and bringing that to our attention. Because that is a very important part of your story. I do want to let you know, too, that, you know, I'll prompt you with some questions. We'll go along chronologically, but you're totally in control of this. It's a relaxed discussion. The 90 minutes go by super fast, believe it or not. And anything you don't feel comfortable talking about, or you don't want to answer a question, or you don't want to talk, I mean, you are totally in control. If you need to take a break, can you take a minute? That is perfectly fine. So this is your show. There are no rules, you know, at all. So you are in control. I just wanted to let you know that you have all of your choices available to you.
Of course. Thank you.
But with that being said, and by the way, I'm also a Bay Area-born California girl. I was actually born in Stanford, California, born and raised in Menlo Park, and then lived in San Francisco before I moved up to Seattle, Washington. I'm familiar with the area in which you are from, and a lot of those counties which you might name. So you're in my old stomping grounds.
Nice. So then you could have some understanding of you would know some of the politics and the way our Bay Area works at times.
Yes, I do.
I was born in Reading, up in Shasta County, so I was actually not from there, but I was born and bred in northern Shasta. I actually, it's funny because I don't remember anything obviously of that time, but one of my favorite memories ever in my life was a time I spent on Shasta, Lake Shasta. Just the whole day was just amazing. So it's funny because it's a little ironic, serendipitous in a negative way. But yeah.
Oh, Shasta's a beautiful place. I've only driven by, but I know people have, you know, houseboats on Lake Shasta and they go renting places.
Oh, yeah. It's
and
amazing.
It's a place where a lot of people recreate. There are a lot of beautiful places up there near Redding. We used to stay in Wairika a lot when we were driving down to the Bay Area for the day, so not too far from Shasta. But so you were born, and if you wouldn't mind just, you know, telling us a little bit, at 3 days you were put into foster care, but can
yeah,
you tell us a little
can,
bit about your birth
yeah,
parents?
It's kind of funny because I could tell you that I have, like, it's funny that Bill Murray is the person I spoke to before I came on today. And, you know, I was trying to explain to him, like, I have the story that I've read my entire, like, childhood that I, like, snuck away from my foster adopt parents at the time. They had this, like, file that I, like, found. And it was the ooh la la, you're not supposed to go in there and look in that file with, like, the liquor cabinet and the medicines and all of this stuff you're not supposed to get into as like a 11 and 12 year old child who doesn't go into the places you're not supposed to go. So I took the file because it was mine, and that was the story I thought was my life. And the thing I want to say is that a lot of the things that you'll hear today is that I will speak about the file that I had, and then there's a file that I requested from Alameda County, which was the county that I was placed in. Even though I was born in Redding, I was born to my mother's name is Sabrina, and she was 15 years old, and she was a runaway from Alameda County. She was born of married parents that were going through a divorce at the time, and she was this middle child of three girls, and the oldest girl was a punk rock in San Francisco runaway, kind of like 17, 18, just didn't want to deal with her parents and all that, and the middle child was my mother. And then there was the younger of them. And so Sarah was the youngest. She's no longer with us. She actually is a part of my story as well. But it's a very long story. I'm going to try to keep it very simple. But my mom was a runaway from what I was told, because she was stealing and running and not going to school. And she was caught doing things that she shouldn't be doing. But I also was told she was like a great athlete who's a soccer player and quote unquote, the word that a lot of people have been abused don't like hearing, a beautiful, really well attractive, nice looking young woman. It's hard for me to hear that. I don't like being told those things. I don't know why, but I figured out recently why those words trigger me. Those words shouldn't be used to describe children. And especially not in files. But anyways, what I would say is that my mom was 15 and she was, I was told, this is the thing, I don't know the truth, and this is where I will hire a private investigator to help me find more information out, because I don't believe everything I know now, which is she gave birth to me as a runaway. She had run away from the group home she was placed in from Alameda. She was in Livermore and they placed her in Redding. And I was told by her that she was placed in a group home she didn't like. So she met somebody. She said that she had to, when she ran away, she knew that she had to give something in return in order to get what she needed, which was shelter or food or possibly weed or something to drink or whatever she was doing. And so a lot of times that meant that she had to, like, give in to, like, sexual favors. And so she doesn't know who my father is, supposedly. That's what I was told, but my file will say differently. But I'm talking about my biological mother, and I have a lot of respect and love for her. That I've learned recently to not hate her and be angry. That's a long story. But anyways, she was 15 and she got pregnant, and I was told by her that the woman I actually ended up being in a foster home with, I don't want to name her actually right now, but she's a foster mom that's well-known in Redding, and I guess I was placed, my mother, who is also a state ward, was running away, and she was matched up in this house that had older men that were much older than these teen moms. And she said that supposedly there was a lot of teen moms that were her age, and there was older men at her age, that were, like, similar to this man that ended up being married to her 2 months after I was born. So I was born to a 15-year-old mother in Redding, and she was getting married to a 48-year-old known pedophile. who was matched her through a house in Reading in 83, March of 83. And that is the beginning of my story. It's not very great. I'm sorry. I do have some humor in it because I don't know how else to handle it sometimes. It's just so ridiculous. And I'm angry about it. I'm still processing.
Well,
we will always be processing this. So it's like, I don't know how to explain it, but I'm sure you guys know.
Well, we understand that. Yeah, we understand that because, you know, Dr. Nance and I were talking before the show came on that, you know, recovery is not an end point. You know, when you process, it's part of your recovery. It's a journey. It's something that is,
my story's not on package yet, you know, and I don't I think it
right.
should be ever yet. I mean, I think there,
yeah.
I think a lot of more people need to research their stuff. And I hope that I can motivate others to do it. I have actually kind of helped in my small like way of looking into things. I've helped my community by not being embarrassed to talk about it and by communicating to people, say, how are you doing? Actually, I'm not doing okay.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why. I've had police officers, men never want to talk about their abuses, and I've had people open up and share their story with me. And I felt like moved by it because I didn't realize that all you do sometimes is just open up and talk about it, and it helps others to be able to hear that it's okay to talk about it. Yeah.
Exactly, your testimony. You're absolutely right. And what you're doing tonight on this show and sharing the truth of your childhood and your abuse is that you are helping so many other people who you're inspiring others to do that. It, you know, it's such an impactful thing, profoundly impactful thing to do. And so I think it takes a lot of courage.
Thank you.
I have an incredible amount of respect for you.
It's the thing that I feel the most passionate about in my life, if that makes any sense. And it's the thing I feel the least embarrassed about. And I don't think if I was in front of a million people, I think I'd be able to speak without quaver in my voice. That's how angry I am and how much it matters to me that it doesn't, like, I have no embarrassment of it. There's nothing to be, I'm not ashamed or embarrassed. I feel like I do want to stand at the top of the mountains and like scream, like, this is like not okay. Like, why is this like being hidden? Why is everyone okay? Like, why is this continuing to just be shoved under a rug? Like, we talk about people getting murdered and like accidentally killed all the time, but you know, sometimes murder happens for a reason, like, well, someone's angry about something. But what did the children do to deserve? And no one deserves any of the bad things that happen to them.
Mm-hmm.
But things that happen to children is just so much more evil in my mind. And I just feel like it doesn't make any sense that there's not more that's done to for justice for us. And the survivors, like, it's just, it's really sad that I was born in a time that, oh, because I was born in 83 before the Adoption Act of 97, I've learned a lot about law in the last year. And I had to. And it's like, I don't understand why I don't have, I've called the Ombudsman of Foster Care, the Foster Care Ombudsman of California. I called DC. I called the FBI a few times. I'm like trying. And then I just had to stop because I was like, I sound crazy. I literally sound crazy. And I have to figure out how to present this in a nicer package that is presentable enough and not annoyingly like over the top abusive that what people would want to actually help. And I'm talking about you guys. I'm talking about like the public. They can't handle it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to hear it. And they shut off and people's eyes start glazing over and I can just hear it in their voices. I've had dozens of phone calls every month to different agencies. I'm exhausted and I can just tell when someone's going to be a dud or not. And I kind of shut down and I say, thank you so much. And I just hang up because I just know it's not going to go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So I've just been trying.
We have a long way to go. We absolutely have a long way to go. And I think that the biggest weapon that we have is to use our voices because secrecy is the most prolific enabler of these heinous crimes to continue on and the cycles to continue on. So, you know, breaking that silence, which is what you're doing, and speaking the truth and using your voice, it is my biggest, people always ask, you know, what bit of advice would you give? My biggest, besides tell someone you trust your story, you know, tell someone, but never underestimate the impact, you know, of even a small, you know, don't think of things as small because something that you might think is minor or small can have a big impact.
Oh, no, I agree with you.
I never thought I'd be on an interview
right now, even though it's just,
yeah.
it, to me, I was like, yeah, I am literally, I believe you in that because I've made so many phone calls and I've been said no to so many times And there's been times where I've gotten just one little thread was unraveled. I picked a thread so far that I got it finally, and it unraveled so much. And I was like, oh my gosh, just one, like, it just takes a little bit. And then it's like, oh, okay, here we are. Like, and the more you do it, it's like the truth will prevail, because truth, I think people can recognize truth. You can see it. It's tangible in a sense, like, and that's what's happened to me when I've started realizing my truth in my life. I'm like, wow, finally things started making more sense in why I was the way I am, and why do I feel, and even some of the scars I have, and the way I've been, and some of the triggers I have, it makes me forgive myself more, and I'm not such a, like, anomaly, or have the scarlet letter of whatever. We don't have an A, but what is it, what scarlet letter do we wear as foster kids in this society? I wrote an essay once about it. It's like, it's important. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no. As I read your biography that you provided us with, that is one thing that resonated with me, and this has come up too, is that, you know, sometimes we won't have all the answers. And a lot of times our memories are repressed, and then they start coming forward. You know, we don't remember, and then something will, you know, spark a memory to be pushed forward. But I think, you know, we discussed that having, you know, having the information and seeking out the information and getting the answers, you know, it doesn't change the past. It doesn't change what happened. But it does help to put those together. And I do think that it helps to have self-compassion, you know, just to know the truth. You know, we want answers.
No,
we want
also,
to know.
But, you know what else it does?
Yeah.
It burns a trail for the other people, because, you know what? If I'm the first person up this mountain, this little mountain here in San Francisco Bay Area, and I'm going to burn a hole through Marin County. Yes, if anybody from Marin County is listening, I'm happy. Because I swear to you, I do not care. But I will tell you that there are, you know, like how there's like undeveloped land, there are undiscovered atrocities and undiscovered connections of disgusting uses of power and control and the lack of internet or reporting back in the 80s and 90s. But guess what? If I don't care if it takes me the whole entire life of my life to get some kind of path going, and the path is that I will find a way that someone that goes through what I go through, I don't care if they're older than me or younger than me, if they want to call me or talk to me, I can at least help them, and I could put together a way that every time I could make that phone call, there's going to be another person called behind me. Or maybe the reason why I have such a good response to the people that are nice to me is because they've already had a call lifeline. But the more calls that are made like ours, is the easier it's going to be for someone like us to go through this and not have to go through so much to get answers and not have to feel this way that I feel. And that's what I feel passionate about. And I never thought, I was always selfish, and I never really wanted to empathize with others that went through what I went through. But it's actually really, really, really healing. And I hate this. I didn't want to feel that way. I felt like the Grinch. I'm like, no, I don't want to share this with anybody. I just want to be grumpy and sad in my own way. But it does feel good to help others. And I have, and I will, and I want to. And it will help me as well. And it's hard to say that. It's a weird feeling to trust others, but I want to.
Well, you're doing it tonight because, as you know, our shows are archived. Your scan number is 3266, as I mentioned. We've done over 4,000 shows within NASCA. And what's really wonderful is those that are not live streaming in right now, we have, as you know, NASCA is an international organization, and we have an international presence, and so we have so many members all over the world that will go back and listen to these shows, and it helps them. It helps them in their own recovery. It helps them. So not only, you know, are you helping people in real time right now, but this archive show will be helping others all over the world for a very long time to come. So, you know, you're putting it out there, and I commend you for that. And so what you just discussed is this is the platform. I'm so glad you came on NASCA because you are doing it. I would like to see if it's okay with you, because believe it or not, we're already almost a half an hour in. If I can just bring in our panel members to just ask you a question. So I'm going to start with Dr. Nancy. And Dr. Nancy, I'm unmuting your line, my co-host. Dr. Nancy, you're on with Brandy.
Hello. Hi, good evening. Good evening, everyone. Good evening, Brandy. Thank you for joining us tonight. Just want to say we're so proud of you for taking the steps to to not allow your voice to be silenced and for you to start really coming out and sharing your story. So we just wanted to say thank you for that. Thank you for your voice.
Thank you.
Okay, that's the first part. Another thing is, well, you said a couple of great things, but I remember you saying basically you're learning how to be gentle with yourself and understand yourself, understand why you're the way you are, and that makes you even more have more compassion, right? More compassion for that person that's gone through or has been through what you've been through. So I just love that. I love that, you know, you're focused on your growth. And I just love what you're talking about, what you're sharing with us. And again, I just wanted to thank you for being with us tonight.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. It is hard to and when I say I'm focused on my growth, it sounds like real nice in a package, but I will say to you that I've been through it in the past 6 months, and I believe it's a direct correlation with the amount of investigation I was doing into my past. My mental health went so far down because I had no psychiatry or therapy, and the psychiatry that I had was in San Francisco, and I moved out of San Francisco area, and so I lost that psychiatry really quickly, and the medication I was on, I stopped taking immediately during a traumatic, like, discovery and being in a manic state. I went through it. Like, I've had so many police interactions, and I've had CPS interactions and animal care control interactions because of the anger and the frustration and the viciousness of my healing. It's not pretty. It's hard. It's really, really, really rough. And the place where I found peace was to accept that I was going through something and that I had to, like, really just come to terms with it and, like, look in the mirror literally and say, like, I need help. I need to understand that, look, I thought I was strong enough to do this on my own. And I had to put it, like, that's what I meant when I put it. I literally put every single thing in the box. I deleted interviews that probably would have been helpful for me. I deleted things that were probably helpful for my case. I literally had to, like, change my, like, everything on my phone and just delete everything, every research I had, but luckily I didn't throw away the paperwork. So everything I, like all the interviews I wrote down, I put them in my box and I had it put away. But it's like, I think that maybe a month ago I wouldn't have been able to have this interview, but luckily I got into subsidy housing and I'm not working right now. I was in a car accident last year, which kind of was a serendipitous, again, not used in the right way, but I mean, like, it was great that I got in a car accident because it gave me the opportunity to get MRIs and scans of my body that helped me correlate with some past traumas that I'm talking about that happened to me that I just discovered. So long story short, I'm still in the very prequel of, like, even finding, like, healing. I'm just new into psychiatry right now with a new person and very mild medication to help with my, like, anxiety and frustrations. And then I'm waiting for a therapist because I have a tall request, which is I need someone who is an expert in trauma therapy and complex trauma, which I never even knew existed until 2 months ago, and someone who knows about the Stockholm syndrome and someone who is willing to write letters to court or stand up with me and fight with my battle and not hide behind the bureaucracy of a lot of these nonprofits that are there to help us but can't help us. So what is the point of it? I don't know. I'm done. That's all. Are you guys there still?
Oh, yeah.
Hello?
Well,
oh, sorry.
Yes. It's okay.
Yes.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Nancy. And I think all interaction is really, really good because it helps you to, you know, talk about your story and your experience. I'm going to bring on Gloria. And Gloria, I am unmuting your line, and you are on with Brandy. Thank you for calling in.
Hi, Brandy. I gotta
tell
you, my name is Lori. It's Lori Purcell.
Lori.
Lori.
I am so glad to hear that you've done so much work already that you want to, you know, find it all out to put your puzzle pieces together, because that's what everybody does. If they don't know themselves, they look for who are they, and that's normal. And you have got issues since 3 days after you were born. So you've got, like, a lifetime of all kinds of abuses, all kinds of people who just kind of threw you around. You have no foundation. And when you're a kid, you need a foundation to grow normally. You don't develop it. You go to school and you learn how to socialize. You get yourself information. And then you're supposed to come home to a loving family, but that's not what you had. So
no.
You're very aware of what's going on with you. There are going to be some answers you're not going to be able to find the answer to some questions, because either people just didn't file it or people just aren't around anymore. So don't let that discourage you. That's going to be kind of normal, too, as you fish for things people don't want to go back into, and it's their record. So it takes patience. And then you just have to accept who you are now. You know, you're going to get this vision. You're going to find out that you came with at a certain point. They're just going to come to you.
It's hard for me to – it's not about – there's a part of me right now that's really, really angry at the certain – there's a couple of individuals that are still – functioning normal people that are like working in the environment of the court system, doing things they shouldn't be doing. That's my fire in my under my tail right now is to like, I want those people out of their office, what they're doing. It's vindictive probably, and I'm angry still. And it is about my healing, it is, but it's still about getting those people away from others that could be harmed by their choices and what they're doing and their selfishness. And I'm not afraid
to say
that.
You don't like it. Yeah, you say what you don't like, and I'm telling you, I see a fighter in you beyond what you see. I think you're going to make tremendous progress because you have sort of like a hyperactivity kind of thing. You want something so bad, and you want it done now.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know a new file. You know, it's funny you say that because there's a file I received from Alameda, and I have to tell you the story about Alameda County. They weren't going to give it to me, and they couldn't. I called them every week, twice a week, and they knew my name at the end of this all. They didn't think they were going to give it to me before I turned 40 because I was trying to get the statute of limitations child abuse case seen because I you know, everybody knows about the California. I'm hoping they know that the statute of limitations changed and everyone could fight for it until they're 40. Well, I tried my hardest, and it didn't work. Which is fine. And the thing about it is, in the end of it, though, this file I got from Alameda County, it says in there, which it didn't say in my other file, which is funny that the people I got this file from, the original file I owned, it was from my abusers, and they were the ones who wrote it. So now I understand why it didn't say the things that the Alameda County file said. It said I wanted to be a lawyer. When I was 6 years old, I wanted to be a lawyer. I actually was pre-med when I was an adult. And the thing about it is I have the brain of a lawyer, though. Like, I've always been in every group home I've ever been in, especially the last one. If anybody, I've shared this podcast, I shared this link with somebody, maybe the staff members on there right now laughing, but I was in my last group home, I was a teen mom, and my daughter now is 24, but I was a teen mom here in San Francisco at Mount St. Joseph St. Elizabeth, and I lawyered my way out of every punishment I got that they had to have a meeting and say, do not let Brandy get out of her punishments anymore. Like, she is good at this, so just don't do it. I'm able to reason. Like, so I think that helps me in this. And also because of the discoveries I found, and they're medically discovered, I have a medical background, so it makes me feel less emotionally connected. Some of the things that make me more harm, I'm more emotionally connected to the fact that I don't have any unconditional love or family or mothers or father or anything. That is very hard for me. The abuses for some reason are something that don't trigger me yet, maybe because I'm not there in my healing yet.
Well, our first love is supposed to come from our parents.
I know.
Hopefully parents are ready to have kids, but when they're young teenagers, they're kids themselves. So there's not going to be any kind of real foundation because they didn't develop one. So as
I forgave my mom last year.
You're wonderful because I never did mine. So
it
was
her fault. She was only 15. She was a baby.
So you understand. You've got compassion, and that's what you need in your goals. You know, you need the compassion. You need the just regular everything. I see that you have it. And although you say you're at the beginning, you know what you have to do. And I think once you get yourself that therapist that you should thoroughly look for, to meet
I need it. I don't know
you.
Where to find.
You're fine.
I'm just scouring. I swear. I promise you.
You
I've
just
looking,
keep doing
I'm
it.
I'm like Google
yeah,
hunting.
Have
I
to
swear.
Be. It took me two years to find a therapist for me. So There's no cap on when that person's going to come around. You have to kind of shop around.
You're from the
that
East
person
Coast,
will
you?
Be there. You see this way?
You're from the East Coast, aren't you?
I'm from New York.
Oh, see, you guys are so much more ahead of us. I keep calling all these places, and they're all from the East Coast. They're like, sorry, honey, we can't help you. And I'm like, please, just help me. You guys are like 10 years ahead of California, legally and mentally and everything. Like, I don't know. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, they're overloaded, though. You don't want anything to do with New York, believe me. It's not good there. You
I
stay
know.
On your track. Take your time. Make sure you're safe. Be patient, and you will accomplish
you.
Your goal.
I really appreciate you, Lori, right?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lori. Thank you so much.
You're
and
welcome.
I'm going to bring on Philip right now. And Philip, thanks for calling in. And you're on with Brandy. Do you have any questions for her?
Did you go to school for anything?
Yeah, I did. I went to City College of San Francisco when I was like 16 or I think I was 17. I started taking like just general education, and then I transferred to Tulane University in New Orleans, and I was trying to be a doctor, but it didn't work out the way I wanted it to. So I moved back from New Orleans to San Francisco and just been working in the medical field ever since. I want to go back to school for something. I'm on the fence of either going to law school or nursing school.
Oh, okay. Good luck with your healing journey.
Thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate it. Do you know me or something? Or
what?
Oh, I'm just wondering if you're curious what was the question about me going to school for? What is that? What was your curiosity for? What is that about? I'm sorry. Is it?
Well, you were sharing your story, and I was just curious, like, what your story consisted of, I guess.
Consisted of?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I understand what you mean. Like, there's other things besides what I went through, of course. I also traveled around the world, which is really amazing. I was able to leave when I was 21, and I was gone for about 9 months. My daughter was, she actually had her first year of kindergarten without me and was with my adopted parents at the time. And I went to Turkey, Romania, Bulgaria, Nepal, Thailand, Laos, and Australia, and Fiji. And I was really, really, really fortunate to do so. And I'm really grateful for my experience doing that. I was able to hike in the Annapurnas. It's one of my favorite things to do is backpack. I also cycle a lot. I'm a bicyclist. I love to cycle. I used to ride my bike from, I would do 100-mile rides, and I rode my bike from San Francisco to Los Angeles on the AIDS ride. And I love to backpack, so I've done Hetch Hetchy a few times. I'm really into basketball. I had my daughter when I was 15. I'm also now a grandmother. My daughter just had a baby. She's 6 months, a baby 6 months old. He's a boy, Jalen. And I have a son who's 10. So I tell everybody that I'm Brandy, and I'm also a mother, and I'm also a survivor. Like, everything I am, I don't like being labeled as one thing. I just am who I am, and I've been through so much. But I've also had a great, great, great experiences, and I'm happy for what I've been through in that sense.
Does the exercise help with your journey, your recovery?
100%, yes. I think that the reason why I've had such a hard time the last year is because my car accident in August, it caused some pain in my my legs and my neck that really debilitated my ability to work and function in the gym and go running and swimming and stuff. So it's been I've never had any physical ailments that like were that like in the forefront of my life to where like it causes me. Now I realize why I never like to sit down or lay down recently. It's because like it hurts to get up and down from that. So it's yes, long story short, the exercise has helped my mental health 100%. Like, I know that when I was exercising, it's funny you ask that, because when I was at City College, I would literally take, like, I would start my day with yoga, then I would be in my math class, then I would go to track, and then I'd be in my English class. Then I would literally take like 3 PE classes and then like 3 regular classes. So like I could have been like a PE major at that point. I love physical education, and I love learning how to move my body, and it helps my mental state a lot because you're focusing on breathing. And breathing, as we know, mindfulness and yoga and meditation all help in mental health. If you don't know, now you know. Look it up. Sorry.
One more question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Do you do any volunteer work?
I have in the past. I do not now because I don't know how to start. I have a hard time with self, like self-worth, and like feeling like I get nervous about what I have to offer and what I don't know how to. I haven't really developed a sense of who I am and how to like what to offer the world, and also learning boundaries and like not being codependent and not. I get scared around like people because I'm easily influenced, and I'm learning. I really want to like. I guess like what I've been dealing with in the last year is like building a foundation of myself, and I want to be able to volunteer, but that means that I want to volunteer with like correct boundaries and proper like sense of self. And I want my mental health to be in a place where I don't overstep my boundaries and overstimulate my life by taking on too much, or also like overdoing it to somebody that needs more boundaries and over pushing it. And I haven't learned that enough yet. I think therapy is important for me to have before I start volunteering. I did volunteering more like with like, I volunteered in the neuroscience lab at UCSF for a year, like doing like neurogenesis type stuff, studying lab mice, brains and stuff.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Sorry,
I kind of struggle with boundaries with other people.
Say that again.
I kind of struggle with boundaries with other people.
Yeah, it's hard. Like, in which way do you feel like you struggle?
I'm aggressive, and, like, I'm kind of aggressive.
I could be very aggressive. It's not appropriate to be angry when you're driving and someone like it's not even, in some days I'm really not aggressive, and that's why I'm recognizing that there's a mental health deficit in my cognition and my ability to really like differentiate like threats and stress. And I'm realizing, okay, why is my fight or flight going off when someone cut me off? Or why is my fight or flight going off when I'm being called a bitch in line? Excuse my language, I'm not supposed to cuss online, but it's one of those things like I had to accept that I have to always be aware of myself at this point in my life if I want to change and be better. And I want to change and be better because I hate feeling ostracized in the community, and I feel ostracized in the community because of the way that my emotional regulation is not of a normal human that hasn't been through trauma. And I think that if you don't work on that, then it cuts yourself short of getting to know yourself and being able to be truly loving to your own self, because you're going to always feel like bad about it. It's hard not to feel bad about having bad interactions with the public or bad interactions with your colleagues or with your classmates. You know, does that help you at all, what I'm saying? Or it's important. Yeah, it is. I'm sorry. It's a lot.
Do you ever get jealous of other people's ability to cope and be productive?
100%, yes, all the time, too much. I have worked on that better lately. I was really jealous, actually, of, like, women in general, and, like the weird, like, thing about, like, looks are going to get attention, and that finally went away when I realized that I accepted myself for who I am and what I look like, and my love for myself helped me get over that. And so I believe that if I learn to love myself more and I work on those skills that other people have, because I don't know what they struggle with. Everyone has something they're struggling with. No one has a perfect life. And although they might seem like they have their stuff together in that sense, they might have a deficit somewhere else. And so I don't feel envious any longer. I actually find it challenging to go up to someone I feel like usually would feel envious and ask them, how do you do it? Like, you're so good at it. Like, I do that to my partner, to my family members, to my friends. I never even saw it before, but recently I've been more open to it. And I'll say to them, you know, I really like how you do this. How do you, like, what do you, like, what, where'd you learn that skill? Because I didn't have a parent to teach it to me. And so if you see something that you're jealous of somebody, challenge your jealousy to say, hold on, back up. That person didn't do anything wrong to you. Their jealousy is kind of a negative feeling. Maybe you could think about, like, I envy, you look up to. And then you could say, hey, I really love your energy and how you do this. How can I do that? Even someone you barely know, it's a good way to learn how to, like, do communication with people in public, too.
What's a good way to do practice communication? Asking somebody how they do something that you like?
Yeah. Yeah, that you're envious of. If you're envious of something, a skill somebody has, rather than being envious, try to teach yourself to ask that person how they obtain that skill, or look that skill up yourself and then see what it is that takes that. Or, like, I've started to just look things up on YouTube, and there's a lot of great self-help on YouTube with people that are actually, like, doctors that, like, will talk about a certain subject that's really bothering you. Like, I'm sure there's people talking about that envy of others' skills. And then you could see, like, it'll break down a lot of things for you. I just learned how to just fix myself through each little thing. And it sucks, but that's how we have to, is people, and you don't have a therapist. If you have a will, there's a way. You know what I mean? And it seems like you do have a will because you're asking me that question and we don't even know each other. And I really feel great that you asked me that. Thank you for trusting me to have an answer for you.
All right, I hope you get better from your heart rate.
You too, thank you. I appreciate. I mean, you too, I hope you feel better with whatever you've been through in your life.
All right.
Thank you,
Phil. Great questions. This has been a great discussion.
Thank you.
So
it's refreshing. It's really nice to be able to help somebody else.
That's one thing I love about NASCA is just the platform because, you know, we all – as Bill Burry, who spoke with, he's our founder and president of NASCA, you know, our stories may be slightly different, but a lot of times the feelings are the same, you know, and we understand, you know, there's an ability to empathize from similar, you know, experience. And when I came on NASCA and told my story for the first time, I had really never told anybody my story. I was shaking my boots, and I didn't realize how powerful it was to not feel alone anymore because people understood. They understood exactly what I had gone through, and that was a first for me. And it's very powerful not to feel alone in your recovery journey because a lot of times I wasn't alone in recovery, but I was alone in the abuse. And so that feeling of being alone was a familiar one. And so I felt like I came home when I found my NASCA community, as strange as it sounds, because I could just be myself. You can be yourself and you can talk about your experiences, and you are being met with those of us that understand, really, truly do understand. And, you know, one thing that you had mentioned about, you know, obviously not having parents, you were put into foster care at 3 days old. Your mother was 15 years old. And, you know, Lori had also mentioned this as well, but, you know, early childhood development, as you know, is 0 to 3 are the most important years for that bonding and the development of esteem and that sense of security. And a lot of us were robbed of that because we were born into abuse, into maltreatment.
Sure.
And for me, in terms of recovery, and I'm hearing this in what you're saying, is that for me, recovery was also learning to reparent myself. I had to raise myself.
Mm-hmm.
I had to figure out how to do that. That was the hardest thing. I had to figure out how to not only raise myself, but like you said, you know, instead of being upset that I didn't know how to do something or was never given the opportunity, I just, you know, learn that it's possible. You know, these people that were exemplifying it showed me that it was possible for it to happen, and I could actually teach myself how to do that, that I wasn't pigeonholed into life as it was, but there were all, you know, that's the hope and healing that we talk about in the mission statement, and I believe that you're saying that, and I just want to share with you, you know, that's, to me, it's just part of recovery is that we're learning how to raise ourselves, and we're learning how to nurture ourselves as these, you know, past experiences and these memories you know, like you said, you got some information from an MRI, I think it was, from an injury.
I did, but I don't have anybody to read it. That's the problem. I don't have.
Yeah.
That's where I'm stuck at an impasse. Yes, an impasse. I have all this evidence, and I have all this drive, right? But I can only put so much energy. There's only 24 hours in a day, and I have other things that are exhausting to me. That's why I'm so livid and angry about it, because like there should be someone or some agency that's like, hey, oh my gosh, you're telling me this happened and this happened while you were in the state system. We need to get on top of this right now. Like, where's the pathologist? Where's the doctor that's going to analyze me? Where's someone that's going to read? I need a radiologist that's able to read these MRIs and say, hey, you know what? I remember I could see a pattern of this incident or this trauma. I could see the scarring or whatever, but I can't get there. There's no footing. That's what I'm trying to chisel out of the mountain. I love mountains, so I'm going to say that a lot when I talk. It's like the footing, I will create a footing for the next person and for myself. I don't care. I'm not going to drop off this ledge. I am going to continue going because it's that important to me that it should be, it's to me, if it feels, because I work in the medical field, I've been in the medical field for over 20 years, and if it feels like a duh, why isn't there something about this happening? And it feels, if I feel that passionate about it, and I can separate myself. I'm really good about that. For some reason, I'm able to take away my emotional connection to some of the things I've been through and think of it as like an outsider. Maybe that's the way I protect myself. But as an outsider looking at this, I'm like, this is atrocious. Where is the justice? And there has to be. I just know there is. And I've read about statute of limitations and the fact that there's tolling on people that go through things like this as a child. So I just haven't found the right person yet, but I will. And then I believe that this case will help others in the situation that I've been through. And I think some people don't even know to question their own childhood or their own foster care situation or the file that they don't have that they can receive and just ask for. Some people don't know. They can just write the county they're from. Each county you lived in will have paperwork and information about where you lived. Medical records are our records to get. We are allowed to have these records. This isn't being advertised. It does sure say, hey, if you need extra money on the foster care. When I was riding on the bus in my town, San Francisco, need extra money? Ever thought about doing foster care? I am so sorry. That is not a way to advertise. That is not what you advertise for foster care. So for me, I want to be the person on the other side. I will put as much energy on what you guys are doing as I can, and I want to, and I think this will be my hobby for the rest of my life. If I can make it a business, if I can make it my like life, I will do that. That's how passionate I feel about it. It doesn't feel like work. It feels like the right thing. And it feels good, and it feels healing as hell.
I'm in business, you're gonna
medical or legal, whatever job I end up doing in my life.
Yeah, I have no doubt you're gonna carve that out. Absolutely no doubt. One of the things that I think, you know, you've been talking a lot about is timelines and patience and anger and being driven. And, you know, you're using your anger constructively. You're using your anger to, you know, get answers, get results, do the work, you know, tackle the work, not give up on the work and not get discouraged. That's a very constructive way to use anger. And I hear that a lot in your story.
Thank you.
And I think, you know,
anger's not bad. I didn't know anger's not a bad thing.
Yeah. It's not a bad thing. And, you know, you're using it for good. So can you tell me what is your earliest memory in thought? What is your earliest memory, you know, going way back there? I mean, do you have memories of foster care placements as a child at all?
Oh, yeah. Yes, of course I do. I have really good memories. I compare myself to two different characters. Memento is one of them. The guy who, like, I don't know if you know anybody in the movie Memento, but he couldn't remember things, so he kept every little thing and kept notes. I am somebody that kept every single piece of paper or gift I've been given since I was 4 years old. That's one way I remember things. And I remember things based on, like, tactile touching and, like, smell and things like that. So from a young age, and I think this is the difference between myself and others, is that we all do things differently. We all have different brains, and my brain is a record keeper. I'm also Dory in the sense that the Dory from Finding Nemo in the movie where she doesn't remember things and forgets things all the time. Like, my short-term memory is out of the control. Like, my boyfriend or my daughter, anybody can tell me something, and 5 minutes later, I might have forgotten what you were talking to me about. I might forget the movie we watched last week, and I might forget that I watched a movie until I've watched it halfway through and be like, oh, yeah, I remember that movie. But other things, I remember everything of. It's really strange, but my earliest memory, there's some strange memories. I remember being bit in the face as a child. That, like, there's trauma memories I have, and then there's a memories that I have. Like, I remember, there's some really strange memories, and they're trauma. These are memories that actually have been going through my head recently because I'm trying to match things together. Like, these are the things that you would be like, this is like. Like, I remember walking through an aqueduct. So I was like 4 or 5 years old, and it was in the Marin County Mountains, and it was me and other children and adults we were doing mushroom hunting in the middle of like some like fall winter day, walking through one of those big silver, like they're called, I think, aqueducts that you go through the mountain to drain water. I remember like crawling through one of those. I remember eating pokey and out of a bowl. Like, these, I know it's silly. These are like silly memories, but like, why was I eating pokey at 4 or 5 years old? I have no idea. Why was I – I remember them talking to me about stinky cheese. And this is group home staff members that are also more than likely not – they're my abusers. So it's – I remember being locked out of – and the Marin County is the main memories I have. And, well, I remember everything from Sonoma, which is – I was placed out of Marin County, which was the abusive group home that I was in for 3 years, from the age of 3 years old to 6 years old. And I was placed from there to a foster parent that was trained for one day by the group home that I was being placed out of. And I was placed into a foster home in Sonoma. But the memories I have of Marin County that are really unique and not okay. And am I, are you guys, we, everyone that listens knows that there's triggers, right? I don't want to say something that's triggering because this is a triggering conversation.
Trigger warning. That's okay.
Trigger warning. This will be a trigger warning for sure. And it's just like we were forced to eat dog food at this group home. We were forced to – and these are – I actually have people that remember this too. And I have staff members that are willing to talk about this. And this is – I found this all out before I turned 40, and no one wanted to help me, but – we were forced to stand on our heads for hours in the hall. We were forced to stay outside while they were inside, and they as in the house parents. We were also forced to watch them have sex, and they would make us watch movies of people having sex with animals, and they would put us in different sexual positions as children. And we had an older girl that lived there, and if she ever caught us doing – like, I remember – because we were sexualized at that age and we were doing sexual things, we would sexualize each other outside of the room that we were doing it in. And it would be at nighttime, I remember that. And they would wear like white robes and the house parents would. And I remember that whenever we would get caught doing sexual acts outside of the room that we were doing it in, that the older girl was the warning girl, and we would get in trouble. And when we get in trouble, we would be forced to be locked in our rooms without food, and we would be separated from the rest of the group. And I remember being separated, and like, I can't watch Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory is a really triggering movie for me because I remember watching it through the cracks of like the door because I wasn't allowed to be with the rest of the group because I had been bad because we got caught humping each other behind a bathroom door or just all sorts of crazy shit. It's a lot. And I don't even talk to therapists about that because it's just like one little thing compared to everything else I've been through. It's it's tiring to tell the same story and not have anything happen from it. And just, there's no, I don't know how to explain it other than it just feels like it's not going anywhere.
Well,
justice.
You want to feel when you tell your story that it's for a purpose there's a purpose behind it that's going to be beneficial to someone in some way instead of it being traumatic.
There's a guy that when I found out the director of that program is still currently working in the system, but he rehabilitates sex offenders now. And he was a director for a program for kids that were in, like, heavily abused homes that had to be in, like, really, really therapeutic, like, group homes and foster care settings. Not only was I not in a therapeutic foster group home setting with them, I was not placed in a therapeutic foster home either. And I never even received any type of trauma therapy. And this person not only, like, was working with traumatized, abused children, he switched over to the other side. It's like being a defender, and then now all of a sudden you become a prosecutor. No one does that. It just doesn't happen. You don't switch sides unless you're on the dark side in the first place. And that is, like, the fuel in my heart to, like, I want to dismantle that person's, like, existence in the court system. I don't think they should be working in the court system anymore. And they are in the Bay Area, and I just think it's disgusting.
Well, absolutely, there needs to be exposure, and that's the thing, you know, where the trigger is, and rightfully so, is because, you know, so many of the abusers were not exposed. They were able to get away with what they did. And when it's in plain sight,
yeah.
You know, when it's someone who's in a public position, it should be, it's more, to me, it's so reprehensible. So the fact that you're calling them out on it, we need people like, we need you, you know, we need your voice and we need your work and we need your drive. Because when you're on the receiving end of hearing something like this, it's common sense. It's absolutely atrocious. It's an injustice. And how come?
And no one should be able to take a class. I'm sorry, there's no class that's going to teach somebody. Sorry, if you could please correct me if I'm wrong. And I've read articles that say this. No one could be unlearned. If you are a sexual predator for children, you should be warned. The community should always be warned of you, because that is it's not going to be fixed. You cannot fix it. It's inherently inside of you. There's no amount of classes that you're going to take that's going to make you stop being lustful towards children. And I'm sorry, that doesn't make it fair that if you did it to a child before, you shouldn't be allowed to go to some class and then be, oh, I'm sorry, I'm not on the Megan's list anymore. Oh, no, I'm not listed as child sex offender anymore because I took a class at the court. That is atrocious and disgusting to me because it's not fixable. Just like if you have a felony, it's never going to go away to the California. The felons don't get off of it. Even if you have your clean slate program, the federal government still knows that you're a felon. I think that that's how it should be for the community. If you're a child offender, you'll always be a child offender.
I think there's a future for you in public office.
Say that again?
I think there's a future for you in public office. Have you ever thought about that?
No, I've heard. I don't know. I don't even know how to do that. I just need direction. I have no guidance. It's like, I've been guiding myself for so long that life coaches are very expensive. but I will write that down, public office. I'm going to see that. I definitely think law is something that is very passionate to me, though. Like, law is interesting, very interesting, especially when I found so many things that are written about. There are so many articles, especially back in the 80s and 90s. It's almost like they wrote more about it then than they do now. About how atrocious it was for us. And now all of a sudden, like, it's just kind of been forgotten, and there's all these reforms that have happened, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't change what had happened. And those people that were it's really strange to me that we talk about all the bad things that happened in the 80s and 90s when the foster care system was so terrible in California. And maybe all over the country, I believe, or most of the states had it too in the 80s and 90s, but they were overrun and understaffed and underpaid, so they came up with all this reform. But those things that happened still happened, and they still need to be addressed and investigated. And the people that – there are other people that I feel have lost the balloon, and they have no air in their balloon like I do. Like I have – I'm a hot air balloon, and I'm flying as high as I can. I don't care. I'm fighting for it. But there's people that are just down on the air. Oh, they don't want to fight. They just, and I feel sad because maybe it is triggering, but I wish a way to bridge that for them because it is healing. It's to, even though it seems like they're scared and that trigger and like that pain, the reward on the other end, the being awoken from this like oppression, is so. I feel alive for the first time in my life. Like, I've never felt that way. Like, I actually feel like I have control over my life finally because of just knowing the knowledge of my own self, like, and knowing that I have the power to look for it myself and not depend on others to tell me my history. It's empowering. I don't think a lot of people know that because they're in oppressive relationships or they're in oppressive addictions or they're no longer here with us. You know, there's so many things that happen to people that went through what we've all been through.
Yes, and secrecy, as you just mentioned, can be so deeply damaging.
But
you know, it's a suppression. We're keeping it inside. I mean, part of, you know, acknowledging these things and saying them out loud and bringing out the truth is healing because it's no longer inside. That's why it's so important to talk about it. Whether you talk about it publicly like you are right now or with someone that you have can confide in. But we, you know, suppression of the truth is so deeply damaging. And
it's
speaking
sad.
Of it, as you just mentioned, it's very freeing.
It is.
And I didn't mean to cut you off. You were saying it's so sad.
No, it's just sad. No, it's just sad that it's this way. It's like you're stuck between a rock and a hard place in that situation. And I think people don't see the light as to where it gets. Like, I surely didn't understand, and I really still don't, but I do know that I just keep going towards what feels better and keeps making me feel better. And the more I am more, it's weird. Like, even in my psychiatry appointments, I would never talk to other people in the lobby. And for the first time, I finally I was empathetic towards others, and they were talking to me and I was talking to them. And it felt good to not judge them for being there, because I'm there too. We're all waiting for the same thing. And it was it's just sort of acceptance of who you are. Like, it's not compared to others or other societal members or other people that are quote-unquote normal, because I've realized there is no normal. It's just we all are,
right.
Even people that haven't been through a trauma of childhood trauma, there's something. Like, there's always adversity in everyone's life, and that if we could just see that and try to understand that, we, as the survivors of childhood abuse, are special and unique in what we've been through, but we don't have to ostracize ourselves so much from the others that are around us that haven't been through it, because they also are victims of other things they might have been through, but they might be able to understand you as well. We just have to, it's really hard, and you just stay away from the bad people that are mean and judgmental. They're assholes. They're not worth their time. It's just, you can't win everybody's approval. And if someone's judging you based on something that you couldn't even control, they're not worth your time or effort to explain yourself to them. It's a waste of effort. So just move on, because you're not gonna change their mind. And there's no point in trying to, because it's a waste of your time and it's a waste of your effort. Because maybe someone else will be able to help. It's not. I tried to convince people of why I was normal and why things were okay, but why I'm not normal or abnormal. I'm just me, and I needed to not convince everybody else, but convince myself that I'm okay. And that's what I started focusing on, is just more with my own self.
Well, I like to know who gets the crown for actually defining, you know, in the dictionary or on, you know, dictionary.com, what normal is, because I don't know who gets to do that. But I'm with you. I don't know if there is a normal. You know, I know we're almost 20 minutes left, and I'd like to introduce the panel on one more time, if you're okay
sure.
with that.
Yeah,
so Dr. Nance, unmute your line, and welcome you back into the conversation with Brandy.
Yes, Brandy, I don't really have much to say. I've really enjoyed listening to you tonight. You know, that passion that you are showing, I believe it was Lori that said this, but I love the fact that you're using, or I'm not sure if it was maybe Ms. Nelson there, but I love the fact that you're using your passion in a good, positive way. You know, you're using your anger, whatever is driving you, you're using it for good, to help others, for the better good of others. And so I just want to, again, just commend you for not allowing it to put you just in a dark place where you're just stuck, but you're using it to help propel you and move you forward. And just thank you. Continue using your voice. I think you're doing a wonderful job.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Dr. Nancy. I'd like to invite Lori back into the conversation. So, Lori, you're back on with Brandy.
Brandy, I think you are an amazing person, honestly. The start of what happened to you didn't totally consume that goodness that you're showing from inside you, which is natural. So that's part of what you don't have to look for as to who it came from. That's one of the gifts
you've got.
You know, I believe you will get into the field where you are helping people. Either it's going to be in social service or higher. You can go into the paramedic field. You got a brain that works.
Oh, yeah. You put the nail on the head. I wanted to be a paramedic, actually. So funny.
So one thing that I want to leave you with to think about is you're spending a lot of time on finding out answers from your past, which is, like I said, normal. But you got to realize that only the 24 hours in the day. It's like you have to at least take an hour or two off for yourself every day.
You're right.
Just to know who you are changing into, because as you're going through all this process, your mind is changing. You'll spot it one day, especially after tonight. You know, something's going to be different about you the next few nights. You got a whole bunch of friends over here now that understand you, and their numbers are accessible, and you're a lovely person to talk to. So you're going to do it. You are definitely going to
do what
you want. I
appreciate you. Thank you for saying that.
You're very welcome.
Thank you, Lori.
Oh, thank you, Lori. I agree with everything Lori and Dr. Nancy said, by the way. Thank you, Lori. It's great to have you on tonight.
Oh,
I'm
going to
bring Philip back on. And, Philip, you're back on with Brandy, wondering if you have any questions for her.
Did your abuse, like, interfere with your ability to make romantic relationships?
No. That's a good question. It has... Oh, sorry. Can you ask the question again? Sorry.
If I can remember. Does your abuse interfere with your ability to make and maintain romantic relationships?
You said romantic relationships, correct?
Yeah.
Yes. I would say both romantic and non-romantic. But the abuse, it's like ingrained in your – it's really hard for someone who's been abused as much as I have. I am generalizing. I apologize. It is kind of like a textbook type thing where I've read about a lot and says that the codependency thing is where we believe that in order to get love, we need to provide something to someone that needs something, and like we're continuously providing something to somebody, which would be your time, your effort, your body, your complacency, a lot of times we get into abusive relationships because we are used to being abused, and so abuse feels like love because abuse is attention in some way. Because deprivation and negligence, I was neglected and deprived as well. So when you're neglected and deprived and have nothing, no attention, no food or love or touch, if someone's smacking you around, it feels better than nothing. And that's not really hard to say that I'm sorry, trigger warning. But it's true that your brain's convolution of ability to, I'm still like, trying to teach myself what like love is. I mean love is like the same sense of normal, like I think each person's definition of love is going to be different. I'm sure there's a textbook definition of love, and there we all have this idea of what love is, but it's going to be different depending on where you are regionally, where you are in your age mentally, where what genetically you have in your body to think of, like how your brain thinks of love. It could be changed hormonally based on how you are genetically made up. So like, it's really hard. I know that generally speaking, abuse survivors are oftentimes in abusive relationships. And I would say that my first relationship, actually, my first like real true relationship was with the staff member from my teen group home. So he was 23 and I was 16, and he had complete access to my file. And so that was one of the first police reports I filed in San Francisco, was against him, my staff member. When I'm 40 years old, I'm filing against a guy who was dating me when I was 16. The police were looking at me and, like, laughing pretty much, literally, like, giggling. Like, what are you doing? And I know that I had the right to do so, but the thing about it is it took me this long to realize that what he was doing was wrong. And it's weird because my daughter at the time was only, like, a year old, so she considers him, like, a father. So she, at 23, was telling me, she's 24 now, but she was like, I can't believe you're doing this. I can't believe, you know, he took care of you. He did these things for you. And I can't even begin to describe to you how hard it is for me to have to not really, I can't explain it to her in a way that she'd ever really understand why I would do what I was doing and file against him. But I feel empowered that I did it because it's the first step that I'm doing in recognizing that that little girl who was 16 was still a little girl and deserved to be in a situation that wasn't with a staff member. And from there, you know, I've had some healthy relationships and I've had some unhealthy relationships, and I'd be grateful to say, and I've cheated on people before, and I've not cheated on people before, and I've been cheated on. And I've had some, I think that all in all though, I'm a pretty damn great partner, but I have a lot of emotional issues and I come with a lot of baggage, but I make up for it in the compassion and empathy and love that I can show and shower my partners with. And I love to, like, cuddle and snuggle and touch because of the lack of touch I've had. And I think I found others, you know, my best partners have been those who need that touch and love and cuddling as well, which is just as important as a sexual intimacy. And I crave them both the same, you know, and I can be faithful to one partner. And some people that have been through things have a hard time getting close to just one partner because it's very vulnerable. And that promiscuity of being with multiple partners isn't to be judged. It's because it's difficult for them or it's something that they find to be normal. So there's no judgment in how people decide to be in their relationships, but we all deal with it differently, I think, as survivors.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Philip. That was a great question. And thank you, Brandy, for your, you know, testimony on that. These are not easy to talk about. You're so humble. And for me, humility was a really important part of recovery, and it still is, because we gotta be honest about ourselves, because then we can, you know, be honest about what we need to work on.
True.
I remember we actually have a NASCA family member. I'm going to give her credit. She said this many times, so I'm sure she wouldn't mind. Her name is Victoria Kelly. We love her. And she hosts the shows on certain nights a week. And she just said, you know, one day, you know, she was telling somebody, you know, I'm just so sick of being crazy. And this was a healthcare professional. And they said, you know what, you need to really challenge the way you think about that, because you're not crazy. What your mind did, right, what we do to survive the really insurvivable.
Yeah.
It would be crazy if you didn't do that. Like, you know, you're not crazy. You know, it would be crazy as if you didn't develop, you know, these triggers and you didn't develop these, you know, these things that you're working on, because we do them to survive. And so she really helped me see that, that yes, we have things that we work on, you know, relationships, you know, our own, parenting of ourselves and our self-love. And they're appropriate things to work on, I think, if you feel like they should be part of your recovery. But I think we also, it's part of that self-compassion that you discussed earlier as well. We need to understand that we survived and we did the best that we could. And there's a reason that we are the way that we are, like, come together. You start to understand yourself more, why you react to things a certain way. And there is something that brings a lot of, you know, contentment. You know, I think, like you said, there are certain answers that we get just from by doing the work on ourselves.
Yeah.
So, well, you know, no, we can't spend 24 hours a day looking for answers. I think a lot of those are inherent in recovery. So I commend you for doing that. So we have about 10 minutes left. I just want to turn it over to you on the next, you know, 5-6 minutes, and just, you know, what else would you like us to know about you and your story?
I'm really bad at that. I'm like, I don't know.
I know.
I feel like I've said so much. I you know, there's, I'm just sort of in a holding pattern at this point in my life. I'm trying to, I think getting a therapist will be the first step in feeling a little bit less isolated. Having a county psychiatrist is not the best feeling in the world because you're just one of many. But, you know, when you're in a place of, like, I really feel like I'm in a desolate, I'm in a desert with nobody. That's kind of how I feel right now. Like, not now I feel like you guys are like the mirage and there's like, oh, there might be some water over there. Like, but I've been feeling really lonely and like on an island. And so it's like a really hard place to be. And so, and it, as much as I know you guys say like not to, like when Lori was telling me about, you know, just not getting too caught up with the answers in the past, I do need to say that I just discovered this stuff like 3 months ago about like these scars, these pictures with me that have like sutures, and like, it's pretty bad. Like, I wish I could share images that you guys could see, and like I'm almost to the point where I want to start like really actually sharing these things with some of these survivors that people could see, like, because I've had people say, I don't see them at all. I don't see what you're talking about. But, like, other people are like, oh, my God, this is crazy. There's, like, a huge line of sutures going down your arm on both sides. What the hell? And so, like, I can't – it's, like, there's a – like, it's, like, kind of like that fascination with, like, someone watching a horror film and wants to watch the ending. Like, well, how does it end? I'm sorry. It's not – I'm not trying to compare my life to a horror film, but it is, like, sort of like a Frankensteinish type thing to be, like, looking at a photo of yourself that's, like – there's like actually a dog that has sutures on it too. Like, it's really weird. It's just, it's kind of like, it's like, I wish I could make a comedy about it, but it's not funny right now. It's not like, it's just like, what the hell, what the F is this? Like, what? And I had some leads with like other people that like survived the same thing. And one of them is in federal prison. And I was like reaching out to one of his friends on Facebook yesterday, and they were willing to talk to me, but I couldn't get a hold of them. And I've reached out to old social workers. Like, it's only been 3 months that I found this out. So, like, I can't just be like, oh, yeah, I'm done trying to look it up and figure it out. It's just, it's inherently, like, part of my body in my life and who I am as a human. I've always been an investigative individual, and I've always kept track of everything in my life. And it's crazy because I actually opened this jewelry box up that I've had my whole life. And it's a jewelry box. I've put little things, trinkets. I've had trinkets from since I was 4. And specifically, there's this little chain that's blue. It's made out of beads, and it's got little feathers that are plastic. And they're like, so there's like blue beads with a little feather, and it's a fake feather. And I've been thinking about it for the last 3 months, and so I decided to go look at it the other day. Because I remember there's only two things I've owned since I was in Marin. One of them is a Winnie the Pooh doll that I looked at recently that has suture marks sewn in it as if it went from like St. Jude's or Children's Hospital, and somebody decided when I went through the surgery, hey, Brandy needs to own a doll that has suture marks that she had, the suture surgery marks that she went through. This doll has literally sutures that are exactly matching the pictures that have the scars on them. So then I'm like, oh, I've been thinking about that box because that box had that necklace. I opened the necklace up. I open it up and I look at the necklace, and lo and behold, I have a magnifying glass that I purchased from Joann's and a black light recently. And I looked at this stupid little necklace. I shouldn't say it's stupid because it's not. I belittle myself sometimes. This wonderfully great necklace this little girl myself decided to hold on to since I was 4. It has dried up like drips of blood on it. And I'm thinking it more than likely was taken off of me in the accident, and that's why I kept it. There's so many things about my memories that are coming up. I remember during this time too that there was this large sun that was made out of paper mache newspaper. I remember it being made in front of me, and its hands were outstretched, and it was almost the same size as me, and it had like sunglasses on and big sun rays, and that was turned into a yellow sun with black sunglasses. These all happened in the year of 89. The 89 earthquake happened at the time. But these memories I'm having are all, like, coming together, and I'm trying to put them together now as I'm getting, like, more and more information. So I guess I'm reiterating to Lori and to everybody who's listening, like, I eventually want to be done with this, but, like, it's just the beginning of me trying to figure out what happened. And I don't even know where to go to ask for help because everywhere I've gone so far has not been fruitful in being like, yes, Brandy, here you go. Here's the line for the doctor so you can get checked out, make sure that you were okay, that you didn't go through this. I just need help, and I don't know how to get it.
Well, I think you're – first of all, I want to just challenge one thing that you said earlier, which is that you're at an impasse or a standstill with your recovery. I don't think so because you're on the show tonight, so I don't think that you're at a standstill at all. I think you're not. You're doing it. You're absolutely doing it. And, you know, be gentle with yourself. I would want to have answers too, especially if I had, you know, discernible marks of something that had happened to me. And I think that, you know, it may not be within your time, desired timeline. I think you'll get those answers because I think you're going to chip away at it. One thing if I can impart a little bit of wisdom is I kept giving myself deadlines or I kept thinking that if the harder I work, the quicker I'll get to the answers and I'll get to the end. And what I realized was that was just really setting me up for disappointment, that I just had to accept it was a journey and just to keep on the road every day and keep putting one foot in front of the other. And you will. There's a lot of answers out there. You might not get them all, but I think you're going to get a lot of them. I do. And I really want to thank you for coming on the show tonight because it's been an amazing show. And
I really appreciate that. I hope you guys are excited about that. Thanks, it's been really great.
It's been an incredible show. Your contribution to telling your truth to the world tonight is going to be helping so many people. I think it takes a lot of courage, and I just want to commend you for that. I also want to thank Dr. Nancy, my co-host, for co-hosting the show with me and being on my host team this evening. We're a great team. I want to thank Lori, another Nazca family member and host, for coming on. I want to thank Philip. And I want to remind everyone to go to NASCA.org, which is NASCA.org. If you ever want to volunteer and get involved, there's a volunteer button. We have so many areas of need. It is so low key. It is very, for me, it was a great place to dip my big toe in. And it provided actually two benefits. Not only am I volunteering, but it actually is helping me with my recovery and having this community. So when you feel the time is right, if anybody wishes to get involved in the smallest way, we've got a lot of areas in which to become involved. So I'm just going to throw that out there. Also on the NASCA website, again, www.naasca.org. And finally, I do want to mention that NASCA is a fully nonprofit 501c3 organization. We rely on donations from our memberships. We are self-sustaining, so there's also a donate button. Even a few dollars helps, believe it or not. Our overhead is very, very low. But we do appreciate any donation in any amount. So I wanted to say that as well. And before I sign off tonight, I always say this, and I'm not going to stop saying it until I am every time I host the show, and I'm not going to stop saying it because I truly believe that the infrastructure is there to be able to keep every child safe. Because there are enough adult eyes and ears on this planet to literally be in the know about everything that happens to children. So if you hear something, if you see something, please say something, do something. It is all of our responsibility collectively to keep our children safe. So I wish to thank you again. This scan number, again, it's November 11th. 2023. This is scan number 3266. It will be available on the NASCA website within about 30 minutes. And again, Brandy, I really thank you so much for coming on tonight, and I wish you well. Please keep in touch. There's also a contact list on the NASCA website, and we are all accessible by phone or by email. So thank you very, very much. And thank you all for being on, and I wish you a very good night.
You too. Thank you so much.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that dawn was gone. You are forgotten after all that you've done. Another tomorrow,
Blog Talk Radio.